Hi, good afternoon, everybody. We're going to kick another session, and it's about the Con Edison experience with the portfolio and project management. It is a particular pleasure for me to introduce Frank. I happen to know Frank for, I would say, over 10 years. We did work with Frank before Con Edison at Keyspan. That's another utility company. So Frank obviously spent the last, I would say, 30 years, so give or take, in the utility industry. So is anybody here from the utility industry? Okay, great. So he's one person that has seen different versions and different implementations from the first version to these versions that we have today. Frank was the CIO of Keyspan, and he was there the CIO till Keyspan was acquired by the National Grid. And right now at Con Edison, he's the director, but many things that he does, and we talk quite often, he is, in many ways, as a CIO and CFO in one package with also enough PMO capabilities. So without further introduction, I'm going to hand it over to Frank, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. I'm very excited to be here. I hope to make this as interactive as possible. I've been to a number of sessions so far today, and so I know how it feels to be in the audience. I want to try to make it as engaging as possible. And I've been listening to a lot of the questions, and I'm hoping to answer a lot of those questions. So feel free to raise your hand as we go, and since we don't have such a large crowd, I can probably make it a little bit more personal as well. So I wanted to share my experience in terms of establishing a governance framework. What I will be talking a lot about is the tools. I know it's a Microsoft Project Conference and UMT 360, but I'm really going to talk a lot about culture, how to change culture, how to put in the governance perspective, and add value from that perspective. Building a credible PMO that came out of a conference, a discussion that was just had with Donna from Gartner. I'll share my experiences with that. Establishing baseline metrics and demonstrating value as you move forward, and gaining financial insight into a $2 billion portfolio. So hopefully that will resonate with all of you guys. So, Con Edison is a utility in Manhattan. It's got an awesome accountability. It runs electricity for New York City, and I was there during Hurricane Sandy when half of Manhattan went out, so never did it feel more important to work for Con Edison. And I was in the part of Manhattan where there was no electricity, so that was not fun. I literally took a cab like 30 blocks to the nearest Starbucks after like 5 days because I was dying for a Starbucks. And when I joined Con Edison about 5 years ago, the landscape was, you know, we're regulated by the Public Service Commission, and they want to make sure that we're keeping our costs low. We can't keep always going and raising our rates. So the landscape is you got to keep the costs low, stabilize our rates, maximize our investments, and also develop a better relationship with the governors, the Public Service Commission, and also the politicians, because, you know, when the lights go out, it makes the newspaper. So that was the corporate landscape. As Mike mentioned, I was at Keyspan Energy for 22 years. My background is a programmer. I studied COBOL and PL1 and Pascal back in the day, so I'm totally aging myself now. So I spent my entire career at Keyspan in IT, ultimately as the CIO, and we implemented a lot of the stuff that I'm doing at Con Ed over at Keyspan as well. And then recently, the past 5 years, at Con Edison, and they had a CIO, so they didn't have an open slot for me, but they brought me in knowing that I did a lot of this governance work and capital work for Keyspan, and they wanted to replicate that. So that's why I went to Con Edison. And I find myself in finance now, which I never thought I would be in finance, but it's actually all working together, so it's kind of cool. I always find pretty basic questions need to be answered when I was at Keyspan and also Con Ed. How many of you know how much you're spending in total on projects or programs in your company? How many of you actually have your hands on that figure? So a few of you. So that's good. I find most don't. You know, it's very hard to get a list of the current capital projects or O&M projects in flight. Who's accountable for them? Who are the project managers? When are they due? So just finding the answers to the high-level questions. What are the projects? Are the investments in line with our corporate strategy? I remember the day I became CIO of Keyspan, the COO called me into his office and said, you know, we're spending too much money in IT, and I want you to prove to me that IT is aligned with the corporate strategy. So I said, oh, okay, definitely, I'll do that, you know. So I did some investigation, and lo and behold, it turns out that the corporate strategy is released in January. Meanwhile, we do all our corporate spend planning back in October. So how could we be aligned if the strategy is coming out 4 months after we're picking our projects? So there's a basic alignment factor. So some of the basic stuff, I think, even needs to be addressed. What's the strategic value of the portfolio? So at the time, we were spending $250 million of capital in Keyspan and for IT. And what was the expected return? What did they want from it? Do they want projects that deliver dollars or projects that deliver security or reliability or safety? And I asked the CFO, well, what is an appropriate return on investment? So we're spending $250, what are you expecting in return? A lot of those basic questions I don't think are addressed. Are we utilizing our discretionary budget in the best way possible? That really where it becomes optimization is key. And do we have effective metrics to gauge our financial performance? So starting at the top, those are the high-level questions I like to ask. And so what I did, and this is true for both companies, Keyspan and Con Ed, I broke it down into the traditional life cycle, propose, select, manage, and measure. And I, on the left half of the slide, I call it focusing on optimization, so doing the right projects. And on the right hand, I focus on doing projects right. So are we executing them appropriately? So I'll be spending a little bit of time on each one of these chevrons. How many of you have gone the full gamut and done a full-blown optimization, portfolio optimization, so that you feel you have the best strategic projects for your portfolio? Not many. A couple. Okay, so I'll share with you the journey on that. And then I'll talk about, and that's all I did. I want to say all, but it was huge at Keyspan. At Keyspan, I focused mostly on the left, and it had huge, dramatic impact selecting the right projects. When I went over to Con Ed, I replicated that whole left side again, but then we've taken it much further on the right side and making sure that we're doing it right. So that's the equation. Below all of this, as you know, many of you in the room, there's a lot of detail behind this, and you could probably spend an hour on each one of these little dots here, like, you know, how do you create a standard business case? How do you determine strategic value? So each one of these little check boxes are things that I've focused on in all of these areas. I'm not going to go into detail on all of them, but if you have questions on any of them, we can answer them as we go, or maybe after the presentation. But there's a lot of work, you know, behind a lot of this. So on the left side at Con Edison, as I said earlier, we spend $2 billion in capital. And when I joined, I was a consultant. So it's a little bit about the culture. Utilities tend to move slow. Does everybody in the utility industry agree? So also, utilities have a lot of people who've worked there forever. So when I joined the utility, even though I've been there 5 years, they still treat me like I'm a brand new employee. And so from a culture perspective, I'm a new guy coming in who they say, well, you know, Frank changed everything at Keyspan, so he's a know-it-all. And so here he is coming in trying to change everything here. So I had to sort of live that down and just sort of slowly but surely move in from a culture perspective and change that perspective. So we started with the optimization on a small portfolio, IT. So they gave me the IT portfolios, about $100 million, bless you. And it went over so well that the CEO of Con Edison called me in and said, I not only want you to do the optimization for IT, but I want you to do it for the whole $2 billion. And that happened within a year. So within the space of 1 year, I went from a consultant to a full-time employee, and now doing optimization on $2 billion. So I would say in that instance, the utility moved pretty quickly. I was pretty shocked at how fast it. So I'll walk a little bit through what we did to make the optimization happen. On the management side, though, so after the whole optimization took off, They said, well, we want to start slow on the management side. So right now we're doing $200 million, a pilot, which has gone very, very well. And as of several months ago, they've given me the green light to take what I've done on the $200 million managed side up to the $2 billion. So a lot of work ahead of us. So it's pretty exciting, though. So we built a PMO, and some of you might have been at the presentation earlier. When I joined the company, I said, do you have a PMO? And I literally, the response I got back was, well, what is a PMO? So we went from what is a PMO to not only do we want one, but we want you to build an enterprise one, and you have three people. So it was quite the challenge. So this is the vision that we came up with, and you know how these things go. They take forever to write, and you get like 900 people who want to wordsmith them. But we really want to foster disciplined project management, maximize our investments, ensure alignment, provide transparency, reduce risk, increase portfolio return. We want to be a coach, a mentor, an advisor. We don't want to be a big brother. We don't want to be thought of as, oh, here comes the PMO and they're going to give me a bad rating. So we really worked very hard at being a friendly, warm, and fuzzy PMO so that people adopted us. A big part of that is being friendly. And then developing the supporting processes and technologies. And if you listen to Donna speak just a couple minutes ago, she really said that's not the focus. You know, technology and tools is not the key for PMOs right now. So I'm sure many of you experienced this problem. Both at Keyspan and at Con Edison, I remember watching the selection process. So how do you select your capital project, or any project for that matter? And I remember sitting in rooms with all the senior officers and huge spreadsheets with lists of projects with acronyms all over the place and dollar amounts. And I remember watching them and I'm saying there's no way they can know 150 to 200 projects. And they literally approve them based upon people speaking in the room or developing a good set of slideware. And that's how projects got selected. And I was shocked by that, at how it worked. And I saw that happen in two Fortune 500 companies. So what I found most of all is that there's no standard mechanism for collecting a business case. Some people use PowerPoint, some people use Word, some people use Excel, some people use a napkin. And again, the better slideware usually got the money. The vice president who was really good at giving a good presentation would get his or her project approved. Disparate ways of calculating benefits. So some used a cost-benefit analysis, some didn't. Some used one cost-benefit analysis model, some used another. So there was no apples-to-apples comparison from business case to business case. Does this sound like familiar to you? Is this raise a hand if you think it sounds remotely familiar. So I was, I guess, maybe sort of naive about this, but this is how it was happening. It was just no standard way, not even a standard repository. So you couldn't really compare the financial benefit from one over the other, and you know, business cases were inflated just to get them approved, and then there was no back-end process from the PMO to say, okay, you got it approved, but did you deliver? So that's what we worked on. We standardized the business case. And I would say one big component of standardizing your business case is we created what I call a strategic value currency, right? So we figured out a way in which we can create a strategic value rating for every single project that comes to the table. So as I said earlier, every single capital project that comes through at Con Edison now goes through this process, no exception ever. They all have to enter the business case as we've designed it. It's a standard, you know, repository tool with the cost-benefit analysis in there, and we calculate the strategic value. And this is what I found very interesting at both companies. So how are you going to relate your projects to your corporate strategy? And this is where you get involved a lot with helping the company define its corporate strategy. So you might find yourself in the EPMO really digesting what is the corporate strategy and how do we articulate it. So in both companies, I spent a lot of time taking the corporate strategy documents, sometimes PowerPoint, sometimes Word, sometimes the website, vision statements, and distilling it into what I call drivers. So they're seven steps in this process. There's a committee structure involved. I created in both companies a senior officer committee and a vice president level committee. And the senior level committee is there to define what is your corporate strategy and what's the priority of that corporate strategy. So in Keyspan, we had 10 corporate drivers. In Con Ed, we happen to have 11. We write all of these statements as action-oriented statements. So this is our corporate strategy, and we want our projects to align with that. You wouldn't necessarily think this is normally part of a PMO, but it was a very big part of, hey, if you want me to be aligned, I need to know what the corporate strategy is. So defining your corporate strategy and then getting them all involved in prioritizing your corporate strategy. So the drivers all have, you know, they all start with a verb, expanding, improving, increasing, standardizing, and then we did a prioritization of those drivers. So no surprise, we're a utility. First important driver is provide reliable service. So here are, some of them are blanked out, obviously, but we have 11 corporate drivers. We did what's called a pairwise comparison using the tool. We got all the senior officers together in a room. Never thought I could do this, but I did it twice with the Keyspan officers and the Con Ed officers. In the room, we discussed their strategy. All I did was facilitate a discussion on, tell me how you would prioritize it. At the end of this process, we ended up with this ranking order. So from 1 to 11, now we presented this to the Public Service Commission, so they would say, oh, so you don't think that driver number 8 is be responsible stewards of the environment. So they would sit there and say, oh, so Con Ed doesn't think they need to be responsible stewards of the environment. And so I'd say, no, that's not the case. We think that's so important, it made our 11 drivers. That's how important it is. What we're saying, though, is if we had $1 to spend next year, 22 cents would be spent on provide reliable service, 17 cents would be spent on improved public and employee relations, and maybe whatever the number was, 5 cents would be spent on being responsible stewards of the environment, because we think we're already doing a good job of being responsible, and that really helped them understand. So these 11 drives are very important. If you think about it, they unify your company and how you're going to spend your capital dollars. So defining your corporate strategy, coming up with a prioritization, then comes the hard part. Then you literally have to measure each capital project across those 11 drivers. So you literally sit there with every project, and each project gets a rating, an extreme, a strong, a moderate, or a low rating, depending upon how it impacts that driver. Now, all the rules on how you get those ratings are written. So you can only get an extreme if this criteria is met. You can only get a strong if this criteria is met. So what do you think happens when Joe or Sally, vice president, comes to the table with their favorite project and they rate it? How do you think they rate their project? Extreme across all 11 drivers. It happens every single time. And you have to say, no, when you look at the driver, the definitions that we wrote on how to get an extreme, your project does not get an extreme. That's a huge cultural change. And so you'd have to say your project gets a none or a low or a moderate, and they would stamp their feet, but they couldn't argue with the rules. So I always say there's no backdoor to governance. So we really follow this all the way through. And at the end of this, you get a matrix like this. So instead of those lists of projects on Excel spreadsheet that you with 100 acronyms that you can't remember, you present this to your senior leadership team. The bottom axis is the cost. The left axis is the value. So where would you want your projects? Which quadrant would you want your capital projects in? Top left, right? So you want high strategic value and low cost. So this is an actual chart. It's old, it's 2009. But what we found, in most instances, we were spending a lot of money on very low strategic value projects. When you do all the math and you add all this up, it's a lot of money on low strategic value and low cost, right? But what's really important here is when you have a senior vice president who is fighting for this project over here or this project over here and saying, I want this project done. Look at the great slides I created. And you're like, I've literally had a CFO call me in Keyspan and say, I want that project done. I want you to move the bubble. That was the word. They actually said, I want you to move the bubble. And I said, no, what you can tell me to do is mandate that project, and I will force it into the portfolio, but I am not going to move the bubble, because the bubble is where it is because of a reason. So it's got low strategic value. And I'll tell you the truth, when you do that, you remove their steam, you remove the subjective nature of a lot of this, and it becomes much more very fact-based. Can you argue that the drivers aren't 100% perfect? Yes. Can you argue that the extreme, strong, moderate, and low is 100% perfect? Absolutely. But it's better than nothing. It's better than that loose spreadsheet or those PowerPoint, everything coming in. It really levels the playing field. So taking it further, then you can use the tool and you say, okay, we don't have all the money in the world. Like, this portfolio would be, if you had all the money in the world, this is all your projects. So this is the proposed projects coming in. What the tool says is you don't have all the money in the world, you don't have all that capital, so you constrain it, and the tool will literally say, okay, these are the most strategic projects, so you should do this versus these. So the tool will help you make a distinction between these are the projects you should do versus not. But it's not a perfect world. We're a utility. In many instances, the Public Service Commission mandates certain projects get done. So we literally, even though Con Ed doesn't think they're good projects to do, we have to do them. So what we're able to do, very important, is show them the opportunity cost of what happens when projects are mandated. So you'll see a big red M over here. So these particular projects turn green because they were mandated, and other projects, I'll go back once, turn red, these over here, because we don't have the resources to do both. So now when we're sitting in front of the Public Service Commission and say, we'll do what you told us to do, you mandated these three projects, but it's not allowing us to do these other projects that we value as more strategically important. That make sense? You have a question? So I think you're asking two questions. The one, first part of the question is, when the Public Service Commission mandates something, there's probably a regulation behind it. So that we generally have to do, but we do challenge it. We'll say, is it really mandated and does it have to be done in this time frame? So yes. The second question, though, is a bigger and more perhaps more important question is, if a project is not bubbling up, so to speak, and a senior vice president or a senior officer thinks it should, then you should challenge, why did it rate so low? But I'll tell you, in the twice that I've implemented this, it has never been a case where the mechanism or the process failed. It was typically that the project was elevated unnecessarily so in the officer's mind. So we do challenge that, but it's never proven the other way around. Well, did everybody hear the question? So the question really is, how do you ensure that the ratings are essentially accurate and that it's not subjective? So that's a great question. There's a committee of all, remember I showed you that committee structure before? I have all vice presidents representing every single area of the company at this committee. When people present their business case, you think you would have to coach everybody to challenge, but everybody's fighting for these dollars. So when somebody rates something as extreme, the whole audience attacks them and say, that's not extreme because of this, that's not extreme. So trust me, it levelizes itself. People are fighting for these dollars, so people do not allow people to put an extreme or a strong without substantiating it. So they become the governance body themselves, so it doesn't sneak in there.
So the governance body meets on a regular basis?
Once a month. Yeah, so in the planning process is once a year. You write the drivers, you prioritize the drivers, and then all the projects come in and you rate them, and the rating process happens with everybody in the room, you substantiate the ratings, and then you do the optimization. Yes, so mechanically, the way we do is all the sponsors of each individual business case does the initial rating, and then the committee reviews it, and my group, which is sort of the EPMO group, is the outside. I once used the word disinterested party, and I got yelled at, so I can't use the word disinterested, but objective party that looks at How did the sponsor rate it? What did the committee say? And are we being consistent from project to project? So that's the governance associated with that. Right.
Have you had that conversation with your regulators to say, can we do this later?
Yeah, so the question is, you know, sometimes regulated, the number of regulated projects and the amount of dollars that the regulated projects consumes can cannibalize your other. So absolutely, this tool, both at Keyspan and Con Edison, I personally met with the Public Service Commission and shared them this process. And they, first of all, they were very skeptical. They were like, oh, you know, and then by the end of the conversation, they were like, why isn't every utility doing this? And we're going to mandate them to do this. So I'm like, oh, I just got everybody else in trouble now. But we literally went from a witch hunt to, you know, because Con Ed in the beginning did not have such a great relationship with the Public Service Commission to now we're learning from you so that we can ask others to do it. So it really is a good method. And then one other point I'll make is, some executives from the utility that had the San Bruno incident where there's explosions in the gas world, they came over and they were asking what we do about governance, and they didn't necessarily have a process that they could point to. So you might argue that the process isn't 100%, but the fact that we have a process that tells us which projects we should do and why, and we substantiate them, is, you know, you can hold that up in court, and you know, it really adds a lot of value. I'll take one more question and then I'll move on, and then I can promise you I'll take more questions at the end. So the question is, do we do any risk analysis? And yes, one of the drivers is all about risk. Are you talking about risk of execution of the project or the risk of not doing the project or the risk of not doing the project? That usually falls out in the prioritization. So it's usually the projects that bubble up usually mitigate the most risk if the drivers are written correctly. So in both instances, this took off like wildfire in both companies, Keyspan and Con Ed. And as I told you, I was only a consultant when we did the pilot, and we did the whole $2 billion. Another great report that comes out of this is these are your drivers, these 11 drivers. The red bar indicates the corporate priority. So this is that same scale I showed you before. And the blue bar shows you where the dollars are actually going. So that age-old question, are you aligned? You know, are your dollars aligned? You can now show this. So when I started this like 10 years ago, I was all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and I was like, our first diagram, there was way more blue at the bottom and very little blue at the top. And I was so excited because the next year we did this, I was like, it's all going to change. All the blue is going to move up. We're going to be in perfect alignment. It's a very slow ship to turn. It does happen, but it doesn't happen over 1 year. It migrates very slowly. So definitely a great project. So also a great methodology. Also, when we're building our portfolios, is we have to factor in, as I talked about, the regulatory mandated work. We have another category that we call operationally required. These are projects or programs that if you don't do, something bad is going to happen. So we label them as operationally required. Then we obviously have in-flight programs. So we want to make sure that we check, is it still valid to do those? Should we stop them? Should we continue them? So we always check that. And then in the outer rings, we start talking about those with cost savings, cost avoidance, and other. So that's the priority order that we give everything on top of the strategic value rating. So this is how we build our portfolios, and it's been very successful in both places. So that was on the optimization. That's the selection, the optimization, the drivers. That's what we did on the whole left side of the equation. Now I'm going to transition a little bit to now we believe we selected the right portfolio. We think the right projects are in action. Now how are we going to manage them? So when I first started, again, now we're doing the $200 million portfolio again. I said, okay, give me a list of the project managers. And silence. Why do you want to know? So I'm the PMO asking for project managers. Why do you care? What are you going to do with this information? So I'm like, well, we need to know. We want to just have a list of the projects and, you know, tell me when they're supposed to start. Why do you want to know that? And then they would give me names of financial people. They wouldn't give me the project manager name. They would give me the cost manager name that sits in finance that knows a lot about finance. So I said, no. So I remember 6 months into this, I met with the one of the presidents of Con Ed, and he was from Dominion, and I was shooing my project status report, and I said, and I finally got a list of all project manager names and start dates. And he was like, you're kidding. You think that's an accomplishment? And I said, believe it or not, it is an accomplishment. It was like pulling teeth, getting a list of project manager names and expected start dates. That's where we were, no lie, in both companies. So now, every month, that same committee meets again. So this is the committee that fights over the selection. Now they get involved in the management of the projects. And so we literally go from a status report, project by project, and we show, I think the laser just died. We show them, how our project's doing. So we obviously give them a red, amber, green status color coding. And even that was new. Why are you making my project red? There's a big fear of red or yellow. And I'm like, look, we just want to be honest, because I'd rather you report it's red earlier on than all of a sudden at the end of the year everything is red and everything is bad. So a lot of dashboards, both at Keyspan and Con Ed, I would say there's a fear of being yellow or red, and I think that's a good thing. You got to have the courage to say that. I think a big part of it was the variance reporting. A lot of people in Con Ed's portfolio, the biggest problem was we typically underran, and I'll show you some data. We fight really hard with the Public Service Commission to get the money that we believe we absolutely need, but then at the end of the year, we don't spend it all. So I believe we lost all credibility year after year. So what happens? People project. No joke, the first time we sent out a spreadsheet and we asked all of the newly named project managers, tell us what your expected spend for the end of the year is. Most of them went into the Excel spreadsheet and took the total budget minus the total amount spend and said, that's our expected spend. And I'm like, we could have done that. We could have created the formula. It's not what I'm looking for. I want you to really think about this project and tell me what you think you're going to spend over the next quarter. So total change. And then we were talking to one project manager and we said, trying to figure out when is this project done? It was a perennial project. Didn't seem like it was ever going to end. So like, when is this done? Tell us about your scope. What's the delivery? And they said, it's done when we run out of money. So it was a dramatic culture change. I mean, people just changing Excel spreadsheets to say, total value minus this is your budget. So getting people to be honest about what their variance is. And in January, February, March, they're projected to spend this and they spend none of it. So why do you think you can hold on to that for the rest of the year? Huge culture change. So this is how the PMO, this was, I think, your question earlier. How does the PMO slowly start to add value and demonstrate? So here's the portfolio that we're running. I guess the laser is back. The purple line is, this was in September. The purple line is how much we were actually spending for the year. So that's actual. The gray line is our two-year history. So the PMO plotted how much have we spent in this portfolio space for the past 2 years. So what's the first thing you notice? The gray line and the purple line are almost identical, right? So then we said, what's your projection? Tell us what your projection are. The projections are the blue line. What do you notice? Projections are dramatically higher than our current run rate. And so we said, it doesn't seem likely, and also the past 5 years, we've dramatically underspent the portfolio. So we're saying your projections are high, doesn't match what we spent for the last 2 years, and we've underrun this portfolio for 5 years in a row. Doesn't seem likely that we're going to spend all this money again. So we really were able to get them to change their projections, be much more honest, and in this particular year, 2013, corporate capital was having an issue. So they were coming to this portfolio and say, can you help us out? So we were able to say, yes, in September, the EPMO can pretty much say very comfortably that we're going to probably spend about $173 million in September, I was saying this, even though the budget was $212. So we gave back $20 million in September, even though the projections wouldn't have said so. That makes sense? Huge change. And this was the EPMO. It wasn't holding anyone accountable. It was just using data to make a point. So how did we do? This is how the year ended up. We actually spent $179. The corporate history, the two-year history was $173, so slightly above that. We looked like heroes because we gave $20 million back, and we helped the corporate capital a bit. and we came right in projection. So when I show you some of the results from the prior years, you'll see how dramatic this is and how much value we've added. So this slide, I hope you can read it. In 2009, our budget in this portfolio was $244 million. We spent $200 million, which means we only utilized 82% of the budget. So again, if you're regulated, that doesn't look like a good thing. So if you're regulated and you go back to the Public Service Commission and say, I need another 244, they would say, why? You only spent 200. So again, I joined in 2008. We started doing this in 2009 and 10, started just tracking this. How many of you have this information, budget utilization? Are you able to capture it? How many of you are underrunning? Do you find yourself mostly underrunning more? So by show of hands, who's underrunning? And who tends to overrun? Okay, so less on the overrun, okay.
But what I found out is that, first of all, by using this concept of burn rate, even though burn rate is not a linear curve, right? It usually tends to be a bell curve. But by sitting with the project manager and explaining how we and how finance look at it, right? Look, if you have a project that spends $1.2 million over a year, and you have 9 months have passed and you have spent only $100,000, you're not going to be able to spend the whole money. And you can tell me whatever you want about what's going to happen for the rest of the project. So I think explaining that, but also explaining the consequences, because many of them have no idea really what the consequences are when we underrun.
Absolutely. I think people had a sense of entitlement. Once you get the budget, it's theirs. Don't ask any questions about it, because don't touch it. It's mine. And if I decide to underrun, it's my problem. It's not. You're holding the corporate money hostage, and you need to give it back up early. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the dynamic reallocation process that we put in play to really make, and that's where the PMO really added a tremendous value is, when you have a project manager projecting that they're going to spend it all and they've completely underrun and they have no credibility from the past about ramping up, you can say to them, well, we're going to automatically sweep that money away from you because you haven't demonstrated to us. So the PMO has a little bit of teeth and we move it to other projects. But I'll get about into that in a minute. Did you have a question? Yeah. Everybody hear that? So oversubscribe the portfolio, so say that maybe you have more money so that you... We thought about doing that, but we said that's probably a bad practice to get into, like overfunding. We really wanted to change the culture and hold our project managers accountable. So by holding them, by sharing metrics and making them public, you create a little bit of the ick factor. You know, you don't want to be the project manager who screwed up that portfolio, so... So the question is, how did you justify it with the regulator? You know, this is one small portfolio of the bigger picture. So, you know, we can, you know, by the time it gets all summarized up, it might not look this dramatic. So what I've done here is this is a small portfolio. It's a microcosm. I've said to everybody, this $200 million portfolio that I've been managing is a microcosm for the $2 billion. And I would imagine that very similar stuff is going to go on in the rest of the portfolio. So that's how we were able to sell it. And I think that it just wasn't as transparent to the Public Service Commission as readily as this chart would make it seem. So we really worked towards the progress. And you can see in 2011, we hit 97%. 2012 is the year of the storm. So Superstorm Sandy hit. And a lot of people were diverted, obviously, to work on other projects. So I'm still proud that we kept the number above 90, because pretty much all projects stopped for the last quarter. So it was a pretty good utilization. And I'll talk about the reallocation method in a minute. One other question? Can you speak a little louder so others can hear?
So one of the things we looked at in our PMO is tying this underspending to delivery status. So we noticed that a lot of projects were going green for the underspending.
Right.
Right.
Right. Well, we set the rules for how what makes it green, what makes it yellow, and what makes it red. So some of the corporate projects still go by the philosophy that, hey, you could be, if you're one penny over, you're red. But if you're dramatically under, you're still green. We changed that. We said, no, we're going to make you yellow or red. So that's a corporate shift as well. So we can see that this year, 2013, we had a great result. We gave money back to the corporation, and that's how we were able to use 101% of the portfolio. So budget utilization is up. We also, again, I'm the new guy, so I'm trying to be, meet everybody where they are. But I said, we're going to publish a book. So at the end of the year, the EPMO publishes a summary of this entire portfolio. What was the proposals? What was selected? Why was it selected? And how did we do? And so we break it down by organization. So this is $212 million, but we said organization one requested X, we approved Y, you actually spent this, and what was your variance? And believe me, the first time I published this 3 years ago, I had every vice president in the company calling me up on the weekend saying, you cannot publish this book. And I said, I'm sorry, but I'm publishing it and I'm laminating it and I'm going to send it to everybody. And I did. I meant to bring it, but I didn't. It's about this big. And I said to him, listen, I'm not here to make anybody look bad. Think of it this way. The only place we can go is up. If you're not measuring it, then how do you know? It ruffled a couple feathers, but I said, you have to break some eggs to make an omelet. So not the most popular person at that point in time, but the value has proven itself. So another thing that we're doing to help improve, takes a bit to describe this slide. This is EPMO generated. The bottom axis is each individual project. So now we're looking at one individual portfolio. So those are the projects. The dot is where they actually came in terms of actuals. And the 100% line is what they budgeted. So what you want is the green dot to be on your budget. So what do you notice here? It's a pretty wide deviation. So we calculated the average deviation in this particular chart. It's 28%. So this is one of the good ones. We had some at the 60% and 70% level. So I also published this chart, so you can imagine how popular I was at that time. Again, organization by organization, and we stacked them side by side to say, look at how good this organization did. And again, it's to instill a little competition, a little bit of peer pressure, and it worked. People started paying attention. Oh, you're going to measure me? Because what they used to do is, well, they would unilaterally decide, we're not going to do Project M, and we're going to add another project, and we're going to do that other project. Well, that may be the right solution, but you got to do it within the governance process that we've established. So if you're going to add another project, it's got to be ranked, it's got to be rated, it's got to be approved, and we got to sweep money to it. So this takes out a lot of that. So the standard deviation for every sub-portfolio was calculated and published. And then so the chart here shows our history. I would love to say, to stand before you today and say, oh my God, it's dramatic. It's a slow ship to turn. I mean, we're at 38%. 2012, we're at 27% average across all the organizations. And in 2013, we're at 26%. So you can see that we're making improvement. Having these charts out there is making more project managers accountable and aware of their stats. So here's where I'm going to talk a little bit about our sweep process, our dynamic reallocation process. Let me just do a quick time check. We heard from a lot of project managers, it's no fair, you're holding me accountable for the original order of magnitude estimate that I didn't even create. So, every month you're asking me to do better forecasting, but it's not an official process. So we said, okay, we're going to allow you to reforecast. And we started doing this in an Excel spreadsheet because our corporate systems just couldn't handle it. So we literally met with each project manager and said, reforecast the remaining. We only do it on a quarterly basis. So after one quarter, we'd say reforecast the rest of the year. Second quarter, reforecast. So we gave them the ability to say, okay, you should get better quarter after quarter after quarter. And that really helped a lot. So I'm going to pick up the pace a little bit. So this is a full year of the sweep process. Essentially, we started the quarter with $188 million at the end of the first quarter. We got project managers to release $17 million. So that's dramatic for Con Edison to release that money so early in the portfolio. I reported that as good news and bad news. I think it's good news that we release so much money and with project managers are feeling comfortable. Bad news is, why is there so much swing from, we just did the optimization, and how is it so much swing already in one quarter? But at least money is moving. We approved $8.2 million worth of new projects in the first quarter. So because money was released, we said, hey, we have it. What are the projects waiting in the wings? We went through the same optimization process, ranking, rating, approved it. And then we had some project managers that said, you know what, I need more money. And we said, okay, that's fair. You know, things change, the scope change, maybe. We're going to give you more money. So again, a PMO that's friendly, we're not just going to take money away, but we're going to give you money back when you can prove to us it makes sense. So we actually started the quarter with 188. We finished with a surplus. So now we actually had, first time in history that I've been managing this portfolio where we had money waiting for a good project to come. And, you know, for a quarter, we had that surplus. Then we started the year with the same balance. So when it, you know, you take that away from there. So we're starting 186. We got another 8 million released, 3 million funded, 2 million redirected, a bigger surplus in quarter two. Long story short, at the end of the year, we got $35 million released, $17.5 million reinvested, and $15 million redirected. Dramatic, huge. So what we said to everybody is, if we didn't have this dynamic reallocation process, you know, we would have never got those 23 new projects funded, and that $17 million would have been an underrun. It would have just been held on to the various project managers, and it would have not gone utilized. And I'm very careful to say, look, we're not here to just spend the money because we have it. Every project has to go through that business case, the ranking, the rating, the validation, and if it meets the muster. And let me tell you, this committee is very hard on each other. So a new project pops up in the middle of the year, it has to be tested. And they're like, no, 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 it's not approved, not approved. Most of them are rejected. So very few are selected. One question in the back.
This is great. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, the committee, at first we were like, we're going to draw the line at 50,000. Believe it or not, we're going to go that low. We do it almost for, we never wrote the rule, but I think it's about 100,000 or greater. We put it through this process. We don't spend a lot of time debating the ratings when it's a project that's 60,000, 70,000. We're like, look, it's 70,000. It seems like it's got merit. Let's just do it. So we'll give it the ratings, but it's not a big debate like some of the bigger projects. I would say do it. Because the moment you have that back door, people are going to use it. No back door to governance.
That was going to be my follow-up question. When that happens, did you get an explosion of 49,999?
No. They really did not. Okay. There was one other question.
Is your process annual, or you bring the committee together on a quarterly basis?
The committee meets on a monthly basis to review the, you know, each project over, under type thing and the ratings. The sweep process happens on a quarterly basis. So the budgeting is annual, optimization is annual, the sweep is quarterly, and the meetings are monthly.
How many projects are you talking?
About 120 in this portfolio. And I only have three people in my EPMO, so they're all about 40 projects each. So let me just move on a little bit, and then we'll try to take as many questions. So the process is, we have the annual planning process, the optimization process up at the top. We have a pre-meeting, so we meet. Before we get this whole group together, we meet with every individual group, and we walk through the details of their project. What's your scope? Why do you think this project's on time? Why do you think it's not on time? This is the coaching and the mentoring that the EPMO really does. This is the magic. You know, it's not the reports. It's when your EPMO sits with the project managers and develops that trusted advisor relationship, and you help them to release money or request more money or facilitate a problem. Maybe they're having a trouble with purchasing or legal or whatever to get a PO through. You help them, and that's where you get a lot of the credibility. So that's my attempt at trying to show how the process works. So we meet on a monthly basis, and there's a sweep sanction process that I'll just describe very briefly here. So every month, people come to the committee and say, I'm releasing money. The releases are never challenged. The committee never sits down and says, nope, we're not taking that money back. We always sweep that money immediately. Thank you very much and move on. It's the redirects and the new requests that comes in and we have to sanction that. So we literally challenge, release is always approved, redirects are always challenged. Why do you need more? Would we have approved this business case if you needed more money in the beginning? Are you doing something wrong? So always challenge the redirects. We challenge every single new. If it's approved, it becomes a sanctioned project and a sanctioned change request. And as I talked about earlier, we have a surplus sometimes. Do we hold back contingency? So that was another thing that I didn't put on any of these slides, but what we found is most project managers, there was no standard mechanism for contingency. We had some automatically factoring 0% and some automatically factoring 40%. So the EPMO created a methodology and says, here's your contingency calculator, and it's basically degree of scope, degree of how many times you've done that. You know how to do that. We give it a scoring, and it comes up with a calculation for contingency, and as the sweeps go on, we say, look, it's quarter number two, you've used 0% of your contingency, we're going to auto sweep some of this. You just don't have a say anymore. And they trust it now. In the beginning, it was like pulling teeth. Now they sort of trust us. Sure.
So it's not like once a quarter you have a replan,
basically. Reforecast, yes.
So that's when they would release money once a quarter.
Well, we accept releases every month.
You have people come in and release money?
Absolutely. Well, we do, it's a little nuanced, but we take releases every month because we don't want people to feel like they can't give us money back. And we sanction once a quarter. So we sanction whenever they reforecast.
What if the release is in the form of people's time that are already on staff?
We let them handle, like if they're releasing resources, that whole, you know, then they're going to shift to O&M cost. We let them handle that. We don't challenge that. No, my whole philosophy is if we have a surplus, if we're running the year with a surplus, then how much can we really substantiate the need for that amount of portfolio? So I'm almost at the point where suggesting, I think this is where you were going, is we might not need this much money in this portfolio. We've never demonstrated the ability to execute to the size of our appetite. So it's heresy. But I believe we should go back and say, we just don't need it, or shift it to some place that, I'm not saying Con Ed can't use the money, but we can use it elsewhere much more strategically if we can't deliver it here. So that's why the fact that we're now taking this process to the whole $2 billion, we're going to be allowed to sweep this money, you know, to different areas of the company as opposed to just within this one portfolio. I think I'm getting close to the end, but I wanted to show you some of the new stuff. So we're also, the EPMO is tracking, well, where is this money going? So we're doing the sweep now. We're moving money around every quarter. Who's getting the money? So we're showing all the organizations of who is getting the most money, who's benefiting the most by the projects approved each quarter. And this has gone well because typically some of the smaller organizations never got funded for the projects that they wanted. So we're showing them year over the year that they're getting value for the sweep process. So you got to show them how you're adding value. Who is redirecting the most? So the PMO, and we haven't gotten to this point yet, but we want to say, why are you asking for so much more money? Maybe you have a problem in your original estimates. So we're trying to get to the root cause of why are you the major culprit in the asking for more money? And then the releases. So who's releasing the most and why? You know. And then I think the last point I want to make is, you know, we're doing a lot of these releases, so we're tracking by organization who's releasing. So this is a good release. So this is to the question earlier. We tracked that almost $19 million were permanent releases, meaning that they're not going to be spilled into the next year, that the scope was changed, contingency was released. So you want to encourage this kind of release because you're not pushing spend. I always say shift happens. So you're not shifting the spend. You're actually, this is a good savings, and you can redirect this money. You can redirect this money to new projects. This is the bad kind. This is when you're deferring it because you can't get to it, you don't have the right resources, something happened, scope changed. So now we're saying, okay, we're rewarding people for doing the permanent releases, but we're saying why? Now, I told you earlier we gave $20 million back to the corporation, so that's really only $37 million of the $57 million is the bad kind. And so now the EPMO is trying to dig into why are we slipping into the next year? Why is that happening, and is that a recurring pattern? So lastly, my last point is what I'm focused on now is what I call churn, right? So I told you we spent a lot of time on this optimization. I'm really proud of it. It worked great in two different companies. So we got all this input. We're doing strategic value. We're doing risk reduction on the left side. We got this great prioritization thing. Then the year happens, and we manage the year. And what we're finding is a lot of give back. We're giving money back every quarter. We're churning everything, new projects coming in. And I'm trying to calculate, well, how much of the original portfolio was actually executed. And so we're working on a factor. We're working with UMT360 on that. So this is what we've come up with so far. I'm not going to drain it because it's kind of complicated. But basically, we take our original portfolio for this particular year was $188 million. That was what we optimized. We had a lot of givebacks and underruns. So in total, we underran that particular year by $51 million, or 27%. Right? We approved $15 million of increases or redirects. No overruns, because that never happens at Con Edison. And we approved $17 million worth of new projects. So on the bottom, I'll show you that the actual portfolio that year, we spent $170 million of the $188. And I would say 73% of the original portfolio was spent, 27% churned. I don't have a stat to say, is that a good number or a bad number? It doesn't feel good, you know, when we're releasing all that money quarter by quarter. So we're starting to trend that. This was the first year. We're calculating it right now for 2013 to see what our churn factor is, and we're going to see if we can improve it over time. I don't ever expect that what you optimize is going to be executed to the letter, but I expect it to be a little closer than this. So that's what we're working on now. And so I think my final slide is where we were. Difficult to find a roster of all the in-flight projects, hard to track down the project managers, no formal estimating, limited project status reporting, no reallocation project. We also created a project management society. So Con Ed does a ton of projects. All we do is $2 billion worth of capital spend. So we put a project management society together, everybody who wants to join. We now have over 700 members since we started 3 years ago. So it's people. We built a website to say, hey, this is best practice. This is a great book. This is a great resource, a great template. Don't reinvent the wheel. So we did that. I talked about all the portfolio analytics. And one of the stats today, I think it was the Gartner presentation where they said, you know, about 46% of projects don't add value. I don't know what our number is, but I know that we're getting better. And the woman who I ultimately reported to said, it may be very hard to measure the value of each one of the things that you've done, but it's definitely having that ripple effect, and you're definitely adding that value. And so lastly, my next step is to replicate what I've done on the $200 million portfolio, on the $2 billion side. So as I mentioned, this year was a huge success for this portfolio. The rest of the portfolio didn't do as well. And that gave me a burning platform. I've been saying for 2 years we should replicate what I'm doing on the smaller side on the rest of the money, because it's a microcosm. And if we're sweeping $27 million worth of stuff on the small portfolio, you could imagine what we could do on the $2 billion. So now that the other portfolios did not do so well, we have a bit of a burning platform. And now they're like, Frank, you should replicate what you're doing. And I'm like, what a great idea. Why didn't I think about it? But I couldn't do it. Like as I said, we have three people in our PMO. Two people doing the optimization, so in total I have five or six people, two doing the optimization, three on the PMO. I can't do the $2 billion without the tools. So you really need the UMT360 to pull it all together and do all. Before, I could do it a lot with the spreadsheets, but now it's just too big. So I'm excited that we finally got the attention. And so that's my spiel for the day. I hope it was helpful. Do you have any more questions? So the question is, I walk through the cost side of it. Are we doing the resource? Not yet. What I want to also do from the PMO is give them tools to do better resource management and planning. We're not there yet. We have a different set of tools being used, quite honestly, across our various portfolio project managers. So we got to standardize that. The other thing we're not doing well is scope management. So we're not doing earned value. We're doing more of the milestone things. We want to get better at scope and be less about time and budget and more about, are you really delivering what you said you're going to deliver?
So make you wonder whether or not that's where the 27 million
is going? Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You mentioned the impact statements and how those need to be specific, quantifiable. I was curious if you had trouble with some drivers on that, specifically maybe around risk.
Yeah, so the question is, when you create the rules to give a project an extreme, a strong, or moderate, or low, those rules are called impact statements. That's the word we use. And so when you write those rules, you say, okay, here's a rule that says a project will get an extreme if this. A project will get a strong if that. Some of them are more nebulous than others. So some of them, like being responsible stewards of the environment, very hard to measure impact to the environment sometimes. Others are very more crisp. Our risk one happens to be our most crisp because we have a whole risk model that goes on at Con Edison, and each project gets a specific score. So we're able to say a score above this gets an extreme, a score above this gets a moderate and a low. So that one's the most crisp. But there are some of them that are a little bit, I think the key to writing the impact statements, not to over-engineer them, the point is you want to measure every project with the same yardstick. That's your primary objective. So if you're using the same scale for every single project, it's going to work. It helps if it's very crisp, then it's just checking the boxes. But don't get over hung up on it.
We had trouble when we did this year that the deferred maintenance sort of project versus the strategic projects, and we ended up separating in two portfolios using the same driver, same prioritization, but just allocating a different amount of money to each. How did you tackle that?
Yeah, so the question is, what do you do for like the maintenance type work versus the not? This particular portfolio has a lot of sort of keeping the lights on in terms of buying the right number of vehicles or refreshing the PC replacement program, which are usually the first ones to go. So we make sure we carve out the appropriate amount of money for them, but we've not separated them into two portfolios. We've decided to keep them into one and hold the process true. And so far, 5 years in the making, it has worked. So we haven't had to separate them. But they really should merit up. If the impact statements are written correctly, even the maintenance type projects will bubble up higher than the others, is what I would say. We could talk a little bit more in detail offline. Any other questions?
I wonder if you can go back to the slide where you talked about the churn.
Yes.
So your churn in this particular case is calculated by the $51 million. Is that what the...
Yes.
Like
yes.
But of that $51 million, if I understand this correctly, you reinvested 17.5 and 15. So are you still taking 51 churn at the...
Well, again, I'm only calculating churn here. So the churn is that the reinvestment was not originally approved. It's a good thing. I'm still very proud of the reinvestment, and I would never stop it. But we didn't have those investments in a consideration for, they weren't even a proposal when we were doing our optimization phase. So what this stat really says, what did you optimize, what did you select, and what did you execute? So the fact that we spent the money increased our budget utilization and throughput, but we didn't do exactly what we optimized. That's a different one. Yes, so the question is, there are always projects that don't make the cut the first time. So then you do the sweep process, and they would say to me, well, why aren't you bringing those projects back in light? And I'm like, well, you're the sponsor. If you don't find the need to bring those back up, once we have a surplus, I think it's a 50-50 equation. The EPMO keeps track of all the projects that didn't make the cut. But why should the EPMO bring it back and sort of champion these projects that didn't make the cut? If the originating sponsor is not fighting for it when there's a surplus, I'm not going to bring it up because there's got to be a sponsor.
Actually,
I'm sorry, go ahead, finish.
How do they know? I guess they assume
they know the projects that didn't get funded, so they know. We make it very, so it's a public thing. We make available the surplus to them, and we say, okay, bring your new projects to us. We have the roster. We actually include it in our presentation at the back of every, in the appendix, saying these are the ones that didn't make it. But my philosophy is let the sponsor bring it back up.
What I was going to say is one good metric that you can implement is those projects that didn't make the cut, you take them, and then the following year, you look at how many of them are being recorded.
Exactly. Absolutely. What the optimization process does is it weeds out most of the junk, but there are still the same people who will post the same proposal every year. It never gets funded, and they propose it every year. But I'm not going to be the person to sponsor it. I mean, if they're not going to fight for it, then I don't think there's really that much of a need. So the way the process works is we every quarter we say, okay, we're taking this money back, so releases, thank you, very much accepted, propose to us. They know every quarter they can come to us with a new project, and they know that they're surplus. So we say to them, this is the quarterly meeting, this is a sanction meeting, come to us with your new projects. So we advertise it that way. Yes.
And I think you said that your prior company were in IT.
Yes.
So do you see a difference in having PPO in finance and sort of getting buy-in from the IT and business and the difference?
So the question is, I was before I was in IT, now I'm in finance, and the EPMO sort of followed me. I just moved into finance about a year ago. Before that, I was in shared services. So I think the only difference of having the PMO in finance is we now have more visibility into the total pot of dollars and more financial awareness. But no, I honestly think that governance is governance, and it could really reside anywhere. And I think it's interesting. You have to be – governance is an interesting thing. It was considered a bad word 5 years ago at Con Edison. So half of me was meet them where they are. You know, I'm the new guy. Try not to break too many eggs. Try not to make too many enemies. But on the other hand, be convicted. You know what I mean? Don't just back down when an officer comes to you or whatever. So I think the governance process has to be locked tight, and wherever it reports really doesn't matter. My take on the thing. So the question is, do I experience that projects are hidden under the surface? We have ferreted a lot of those out. A lot of them have, what I found that in the beginning was we would do the optimization and share all the results, and then there's the process of entering the projects into the financial system of record. And what they would do is they would just add projects that were never approved, and now they're in the system of record, and we're like, well, how did... You know, the output of optimization is the input into the financial system of record. So in the first year, we had a little bit of that. But now everybody knows no capital project will be considered unless it goes through. The committee is called the Strategic Alignment Committee, which has quickly been named the SAC Committee. So our project has been SACed. So it's an unfortunate acronym, but I can't change it now. Would it technically be possible to run projects? I would say yes. I mean, we don't have the visibility. Maybe when we do the whole capital portfolio, but right now I would say it's probably possible that it happens. It's sort of a trust. I can't imagine that happening though. I mean, especially in a utility. I mean, everybody wants to do the right thing, so I think it would be rare. In the beginning, yes, but now, no.
It seems like strategic initiatives at that particular level. So each of them can have their own prioritization and own budgets and
I think you want to be as centralized and standard as possible. Again, I think the moment you open a back door, then it'll just be used. So I think the more you can standardize, the better. Now, we haven't gone into most of the portfolio that I've been... The optimization, absolutely not. I would say it should all be done one corporate optimization to make sure that the company is really doing what it's supposed to be doing or want to do. And... defining the strategy and aligning to it is critical. On the managed side, I also think that you really need to have a consistent set of process. I don't want to control anything. There was a couple of points in time where people said, oh, you know, this LaRocca wants to control everything. He wants to say where all the money goes. And I absolutely do not. I have no desire to say whether we should do more work in gas, electric, or steam. I don't want to be in that arena at all. All I want to do is put everything in a transparent way so that the people who run the business can actually make better decisions about the business. So I think it's all about providing transparency, auditability, governance, control. We report to, as I said earlier, the Public Service Commission, the mayor, the governor. And anytime a storm happens, we need to be able to substantiate our rationale for a lot of these things. So I would say consistency is key. Any final questions, thoughts, comments? Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. If you have any other questions, come on up.